going to open our hearing today for the Senate Committee on Education. Today is March 24th, 2015. We're going to go in this order. We're going to take up Senate Bill 122, so Senator Hensel can come to the center if he would like. And then we're going to go to Senate Bill 932, and we're going to set aside until 2 o'clock. So, because we do have some minute, it has to do after that. If we have to have another hearing, we can do that later. But for right now, we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 122. And with that, we've already had a hearing before. Senator Hensel.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. Members of the committee, for the record, Bill Hensel, Senator from District 29. The Dash 2 amendment for Senate Bill 122 was a collaboration between our office, Lori Wimmer from the OEA, and the Department of Revenue's office. We attempted to answer all the questions and concerns they brought up from the last public meeting and some of the concerns that were brought up by the committee itself. The Dash 2 amendment removes parent and homeschooler teachers at their request. It redefines classroom expenses to better meet the department what the Department of Revenue has asked for. It also lowers the amount of the credit from 250 down to 100 for a single return, and 200 if they're filing a joint return and both individuals are teachers who bought supplies. Based on the Dash 2 amendments, OEA is no longer opposed to the bill, and I would be more than happy to answer any questions about the Dash 2 you might have. I've also visited with Representative Margaret Doherty, Chair of the House Committee on Education. She expressed a positive interest in the bill, should it be passed out of the Senate, and I would also offer to carry the bill should you so desire. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for anybody?
No, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I would entertain a motion to adopt the Dash 2 amendments.
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments as presented.
Senator Knope moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments as presented. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any opposition? Also seeing none, so adopted.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 122 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 122 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits. Any discussion? Seeing none. Any opposition? Also seeing none. The bill passes and is sent on its way. Thank you, Senator Hensel. So with that, we'll close our work session on Senate Bill 122, and we are going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 932. And with that, we'll have a short explanation by our administrator. And Senator Dembro here. I don't see him. Interesting. Representative Vega Peterson? Very good. You can come on up, and if Senator comes in, we'll get him up here with you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 932 proposes to extend eligibility for receiving Oregon financial aid scholarships and grants to certain students who qualify for an exemption from paying non-resident tuition. This bill has no subsequent referral by prior reference. There are no amendments at this time. The bill may have a fiscal impact, but a statement has not yet been issued, and the bill has no revenue impact.
And with that, well, Representative Vega Peterson.
Yes,
begin
thank you.
The conversation.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jessica Vega Peterson. Oh.
And well, he made it too.
For the record, my name is Jessica Vega Peterson. I'm the state representative for House District 47 in East Portland. I'm going to defer to my senator colleague and let him go ahead and present the first part of the bill. But I look forward to testifying in just a minute.
Perfect.
Okay. Thank you for your kindness, good representative. Colleagues, Chair Roblin, it's an honor for me to bring Senate Bill 932 before you today.
And you are?
And I am.
Okay.
Senator Michael Dembro, I represent Northeast Southeast Portland in the Oregon State Senate. And just to let you know what brings us to this bill, most of you will remember that in 2013, the legislature passed House Bill 2787, the tuition equity legislation, after many years of effort. Tuition equity allows young Oregonians who have grown up in this state, who've gone to high school in this state, who've graduated from an Oregon high school and been accepted to an Oregon university, but don't at this point have legal documentation, to attend the university at the same in-state rate as their high school peers. House Bill 2787 passed in 2013 on a strong bipartisan vote in both chambers and went into effect with the 2013-14 academic year. Very soon after the bill passed and the program began, I started hearing from counselors, academic advisors, financial advisors from around the state, high schools, community colleges, and universities, that there are some problems with the system that need to be addressed. These problems fall into three areas. The first two have to do with timelines that were put into the bill that have turned out to be unnecessary and obstructive, that are creating obstacles for students. The first of these requires that an individual must enroll in a university within 3 years of graduating from high school. Now, on the surface, that doesn't seem, you know, 3 years doesn't seem too long a time, but or too short a time. But in fact, as it turns out, many students are not going directly to university. They're starting at a community college. So they're going to the community college after high school and then transferring. And the three-year limit is a problem for those students who are obliged to attend the community college part-time or who have had to stop out and work for a year or, you know, whatever. It's a real challenge for them. The second that I heard about from counselors is the access to tuition equity expires after 5 years of your initial enrollment in the university. So for students who are leaving high school and then going to a university, that five-year limit is actually creating problems. As I think you know, colleagues, these days it's becoming increasingly rare for students to finish in the traditional 4 years, and it's actually a challenge to finish even in 5 years. And so for students, for many students, this is creating a problem. It's taking many students more than 5 years to complete their degrees. None of the other states that have tuition equity, and there are about 15 other states, none of them have these deadlines. They're really unnecessary. They were first put in 2011 because of concerns about a court case that was in process in California. That court case, you know, in the end, the California Supreme Court ruled unanimously in support of tuition equity, and we never removed those deadlines that were deemed to make it easier to resist the case. As I mentioned, none of the other states that have tuition equity have these, and it's really an unnecessary obstacle. The third obstacle that students face is their lack of access to state need-based aid. Again, other states have extended access to their need-based aid to tuition equity students, but that's not possible here in Oregon. However, with Senate Bill 932, the Access to Opportunity Act, we will extend access to some of Oregon's most promising but neediest students by removing this obstacle. In pursuit of this, OSAC, the Oregon Student Access and Completion Office, will develop a financial aid form modeled after the form used in other states to determine which students are, in fact, the neediest. Colleagues, the number of students eligible for this access is small. It will be small, but for those students, it will make the difference between success and failure. The co-chair's budget includes an increase to the Oregon Opportunity Grant so that no current recipients would be displaced by the addition of these students. And finally, I believe that there is broad support for all three of these changes in Oregon's colleges and universities, and you'll be receiving letters of support from all of them, I believe, prior to any work session on this bill. So, colleagues, I urge your attention to this and to your support of this. You will hear, of course, from Co-Chief Sponsor Vega Peterson, and on behalf of the other chief sponsors, Senator Courtney, Representative Gallegos, Representative Comp, we urge your aye vote.
Thank you. Again, for the record, I'm Jessica Vega Peterson, State Representative from House District 47 in East Portland. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 932, Access to Opportunity. Senator Denbro, excuse me, did an excellent job of giving you an overview of the bill's background and the central elements. So I wanted to take a little time just to talk about the students that are impacted by this bill and address a couple common responses that I've heard in talking about this bill. So first of all, let's be clear that the students we're talking about are both work eligible students and are currently working students. So the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrival Program, or DACA, was passed in 2012. What that program does is provide all of the students affected by the original tuition equity bill with a work card, a social security number, and a release from deportation. And this is in a renewable 2-year cycle. So we know that these students are already living here, they're studying here, and they're contributing to the workforce now and in the future. We need to allow them every opportunity that they deserve to maximize their contributions to Oregon's economy by earning an affordable university degree. We know that the students are here. We know that they need this Oregon Opportunity Grant. But we also know that there are limited funds in the Oregon Opportunity Grant. The limited amount of the state-administered financial aid leads to the question, if there's not enough money for the students as it stands, what's the logic in allowing more students to apply for it? So as Senator Denbro said, the population that would be affected by this bill is incredibly small. When you look at the number of students currently receiving the Oregon Opportunity Grant, it's upwards of 35,000 students at public universities per year. Portland State University right now is estimating that currently there's about 25 students that are enrolled in their school based on tuition equity. So even if there were a few hundred students, which there aren't now, but even if there were a few hundred students in Oregon schools, the increase in the number of students who are just applying for the Oregon Opportunity Grant is incredibly small compared to the base of students that are currently in the program. We know that six other states, Texas, Washington, California, Illinois, New Mexico, and Minnesota, are already providing access to state financial aid for students affected by tuition equity legislation. And that's with good reason, because we know that few students, any students, are able to completely pay out of pocket for their education. And what Senate Bill 932 does is open students' options to wait in line for aid. The opportunity to apply for the grant is just that opportunity. We know that the pool of funds is limited, but there's no reason to deny these students access to the same opportunity afforded by their peers. I want to conclude my testimony by again thanking you for the opportunity to testify. I'm happy to answer any questions you have, but I do urge your support of Senate Bill 932.
Questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we're going to move on to a number of students, and we're going to use a timer. And so it gives you about 3 minutes. So if you and it goes to a yellow light and then a red light right towards the end. So that's pretty much it. So with that, Juan Navarro, Marina Perondas. I'm saying these names wrong.
Mariana.
Thank you. And Amy Magnuson, come on up and take a seat. And we'll go through the lineup however you want to go. And thank you for being here. However you want to go, it's fine with me. Thank you.
Chair Roblin and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name is Amy Magnuson. I'm a guidance coordinator from Clatsop Community College in Astoria, Oregon, on the Northwest Coast. I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 932. As an advisor, I work with first-generation and low-income students. A portion of my advisees are deferred action students, and so I've become familiar with the tuition equity affidavit they need to fill out when they transfer to a university. I support the proposed modifications to the current tuition equity law. The impact of these changes will benefit both individual students and the state of Oregon. The changes to the tuition equity bill that will benefit individual students specifically include removal of time limits, allowing students, again, as Senator Dembro said, to pay out of pocket and build their fiscal resources to achieve their degree goals. And to put this into context, the current cost of attendance at Oregon University System schools ranges between $21,000 and $24,000 a year. State aid and scholarships will help ease some of the financial burden for students who aren't able to access federal aid and loans. There are also economic reasons to support this bill. When you think about it, Oregon invests in these students K through 12. Why stop the investment now? Give these students an opportunity to repay that investment by allowing them to continue their education. Supporting these academically capable students will positively support a changing state economy that will disproportionately depend on jobs requiring higher education and specialized skills. In Northwest Oregon, where I live, in our rural community, according to qualityinfo.org, 50% of the top 20 jobs appearing on the Oregon Employment Department's occupational prioritization list require a bachelor's degree. 20% of my community meets that requirement. It is simply in the best interest of our state and regional economies to encourage and support advancing the education of these students. This is a win-win opportunity for the students and for the state of Oregon that will improve the quality, diversity, and skill of Oregon's future workforce. Thank you again for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Whoever wants to go next.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Just give me one second.
No problem. Take your time. Take a deep breath. And
first time I've been up here, so
I understand.
Chair Roblin and members of the committee. My name is Juan Navarro, and I am a student of Western Oregon University and a member of OSA. I am also an undocumented student. I'm here in support of Bill SB 932, Access to Opportunity. I'm currently studying exercise science and a minor in human biology. When I graduate, I want to become a physical therapist because I've received many help. I came to this country, and I've received therapy for about 17 years, just finished up my last year, and I'm here to pursue a career in physical therapy, hopefully in the future. The reason to help, same way I've been helped. I am a transfer student from Chemeketa here in Salem. I did this because I simply could not afford being able to go to university for 4 years. It was still difficult. I spent 3 years at Chemeketa part-time, two years before I got lucky and got a job on campus. I was lucky enough to transfer to Trey University before the three-year period was over. I could have easily taken one more term, and it could have been a whole different story. I was lucky enough to slip under the radar, but I know others, fellow students, that were not able to. I urge you to support. I transferred to Western, and I'm currently just pursuing my education, just like anybody else. I urge you to support Bill SB 932 because it would help any Oregonians. I know an individual at Chemeketa who had the financial pressures get to her. She was about to quit school altogether. My advice to her was to keep working hard, and good things will happen to good people. Please vote yes on SB 932, Access to Opportunity, and please let this be one of the good things that happens to her and many other hardworking students in our community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin and members of the committee. My name is Mariana Sofia Peridonas, and I am a student at Lane Community College, and I'm here with the Oregon Student Association, as well as representing the Oregon Students of Color Coalition board. I am here to ask you today to support SB 932. The dream of getting a higher education isn't a reality for every hardworking student that did the same amount of work as their peers throughout high school. And I come from a group that has goals and aspirations to give back to their communities, but unfortunately, a lot of the time, this cannot happen. This bill would allow more opportunities and remove existing barriers students that qualify tuition equity face. As a student who is on DACA, I personally know the afflictions with having limited opportunities in higher education. I was around 5 years old when my parents decided to come here seeking safety. And having a single mom try to raise six children and try to put all of us through college is a really, really big stress and pressure on her. With no income and education or support, I had to watch my mother try her best in giving us everything she could, working three jobs in hopes to give us everything that we could do and make sure that we were able to get the resources we needed to accomplish our dreams. As you may know, being a single mom is not a really easy thing to do in the U.S., and an undocumented mother, like, she was making way less than a single mother makes per year in the U.S. I can't even begin to explain to you all how much stress there is on not just me, but the rest of my younger siblings that want to go into higher education. Right now, it's my sister's birthday. She just turned 18, so she's here today, and I know that she's scared of her future, and I'm scared with her because we don't know what opportunities she'll have when she graduates high school this year. Allowing this bill to pass would allow her and future students to gain access to the tools that they need in order to succeed in higher education. Removing the three-year grace period from time of graduating high school and college allows students like myself attending a community college immediately after high school more time to complete courses at a much more affordable rate. As you know, higher education keeps increasing, and we can only do this with so much applicable time that we have to complete the courses that we need to transfer. And honestly, removing that five-year restriction is going to encourage a lot more tuition equity students to pursue even more education. Personally, for me, I want to go to law school, and I want to get my human rights law degree, and I want to give back to a community that's given me so much. And I urge you to understand where we are coming from and hope that you see where we want to be. Thank you again for letting me testify, and please, please support SB 932. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this group? Seeing none, thank you very much. So I missed somebody on my list. So we're going to go back to Maria Saldana and Maria Cristina and Manuel Mejia. If I said that right. Whoever wants to start.
I will.
Okay.
My name is Maria Isabel Saldana Suastes, and I'm a senior at McKay High School here in Northeast Salem. I am here today to ask you to support Senate Bill 932, the Access to Opportunity Bill. I am also here to represent one more of the many dreamers that are pursuing their unique goals. I am a Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, recipient, which means that I'm still undocumented, but I have relief from deportation, can legally work, and apply for a driver's license in Oregon. I panicked the moment that I realized that all my plans of paying for college with need-based financial aid, scholarships, and even student loans would automatically be eliminated from my list of resources to pay for school. It is stressful knowing that I do not qualify for a lot of the help that my peers do. My plan is to become a teacher, though art and engineering is my passion. I will be the first of five siblings in my home to even graduate, and I will have to find my own means of payment. With both my parents not even having gone through higher education. I mean, my dad went through second grade, and my mother only got to third grade in Mexico. They have no clue how the system works, and it's up to me to find my way through graduate school. I'm ready to do whatever it takes to get through college, but that extra financial support through Oregon's Opportunity Grant would be really amazing, would be a really amazing blessing. I know I will have to be prepared physically, mentally, and emotionally to overcome my financial barrier. Physically, as I plan to save money for my freshman year of college by working this summer. I plan to work the mornings in the fields and the afternoons at my current cashier job at Kmart. Mentally, as I write scholarship applications on top of schoolwork, and I've had to go through this my last semester, and it's been really hard keeping up with my courses as well as meeting the deadlines for all the scholarships that I do qualify for. And lastly, emotionally, in bearing the knowledge that many of my friends are going through the same process. I have a group at my school, and we have all, you know, taken the courage to share with each other that we are undocumented, and we are working on scholarships together, you know, editing essays and stuff, and we've tried to, you know, support each other and empower each other through that club. And it's difficult knowing that other people are having to go through the same process as I am. I have done everything they told me to do in order to be set for college. I kept my grades up, did sports, extracurricular activities, and volunteered. We are given the skills, and we take them, and we run with them, and then we realize that we can't even join the race. We have to start 50 strides before other students based solely on a residential status. I'm 73 days away from graduation with with very scarce means of paying for college. Even though the door may be open and I get admitted into the best of schools, I won't be able to take a single step on campus without funds. Senate Bill 932 would help me get there, combined with savings and other scholarships. I urge you to support Senate Bill 932. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Knopp, members of the committee. My name is Manuel Mejia Gonzalez. I am a current student at Lynn Community College and Multicultural Programs Coordinator with its residing student government. I am here today to urge you to support Senate Bill 932. I'm an incredibly rare exception in the way that I am a student who was undocumented but not on DACA right now. I later became a permanent resident of the United States, and I have always been taught to persevere and when I truly believe in something. The whole reason why I'm in the United States is about to become the first one in my family to graduate from a post-secondary education with honors. It's because of the enduring spirit that my mother planted in me. I saw my mother take her three children to the United States, not speaking a single word of English. She worked 7 days a week so that we could have a decent home. Like all students, I have dreams. Mine are dreams of helping my community and dreams to help the folks who endure less privileged lives than I do. I love being involved in my community. Today, I'm the Multicultural Programs Coordinator with Link, the Associated Students of Lynn Community College and Oregon Students of Color Coalition board member and the Lynn County League of United Latin American Citizens Youth Council president. I would not be involved if it wasn't because of the support that my state has given me. I would certainly not be graduating with honors so fast if I had not had my state support me, and I thank you all so much. But I also want to tell you that there are students like me that have never had this support at with the Oregon Opportunity Grant and other scholarships, as well as the time limits that they face. Well, I'm taking 17 credits this term, next term. My friend, let's call her Rosa, was forced to decide whether she would buy groceries or books. Rosa skips breakfast sometimes only has oatmeal. Well, it's really, really imperative that we are supporting this, as that we're supporting our Oregonians' education. While Rosa is a very self-driven, incredibly smart, dedicated individual, she can certainly not finish community college in 3 years because of the simple fact she has to work 30 hours a week to support her house, tuition, books, and other expenses you might all be familiar with. I respectfully ask I respectfully beg this committee to vote yes on Senate Bill 932 so Rosa and other tuition equity eligible students can access the Oregon Opportunity Grant so that these folks do not have to face a 3 years grace period after high school and enrolling into a public university, and so that Rosa can finish community college, as well as removing the 5 year period from enrollment to a public university where state tuition and reach a bachelor's. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present my testimony today.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, Chair Knob, Vice Chair Knob, I'm sorry. And members of the committee, good afternoon. Thank you for having me here today. My name is Maria Cristina Gonzalez Vasquez. I'm a junior at Portland State University. I'm three semesters from graduating with my public health degree. I'm here to tell you a little bit about how my story began. I was born in a small town in Mexico where me and my sister were the first, were secluded from the elementary school because my mother was one of the first women to get a divorce to escape domestic violence. Without a college degree or skills, she could not afford to support both of us. She had to come to the U.S. and get a job and then send back for us so we could have a better opportunity and an education. As a child growing up, I always was surrounded by abuse and pain. My only escape throughout my life was school. In my mind from an early age, I knew that I had to go to college and obtain a college degree and have a career. My dream as a girl was not to be a princess, but to be independent and free, but most importantly, to live without abuse. I attended Portland Community College for 3 years. I had to work multiple jobs, be involved in student government, and volunteer. I did everything I could possibly do to get the most scholarships I could get. When I transferred to Portland State University, I received the Diversity Scholarship, which is a full tuition scholarship. I received also the Equal Access Scholarship that would pay for my fees. And I also received another scholarship with $2,500 from the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. With all those scholarships, I had thought that my last 2 years were all covered and I had nothing to worry about. Unfortunately, when I transferred, I discovered that I was not eligible for tuition equity and I would have to pay out of state tuition. With all that money, I was only able to pay one class. I, as many students here today, cannot overcome that burden. It's already hard enough to work two or three jobs, be involved in our communities, volunteering, and have to take care of family and many other responsibilities, and also have to pay out-of-state tuition. Now my dream seems impossible. I had to take the winter term off because I was not able to go to school. I'm working in a hospital right now to save to go back to school, but I don't know if that dream will ever be possible. I'm here to argue respectfully to vote yes on Senate Bill 932, Access to Opportunity, and let me have the opportunity to not repeat my family's history pattern of abuse and change our history pattern and have a better life. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you again. So, Yari Bendia, I don't know if I saw well I said that, and Mara Martinez. And Susan Angelida. All three of you, if you can. Did I say it so badly you couldn't? Okay. Thanks. You can come on up to the front desk if you're whoever those people. Oh, coming from outside. I forgot that there's another room full of people. Thank you. So thanks for taking your time to get up there so I could figure out the others were outside. So thanks for being here. And whoever wants to start.
Okay. Dear Representatives of Oregon, my name is Yair Buendia, and I'm a student at OSU, and I'm representing Juventud Faceta and OSU Mecha. I am here today to share my experience of why Senate Bill 932, Access to Opportunity, is a basic human right, and how it benefits us, just us undocumented students, but also Oregon as a whole. At the age of 9, I was brought to the United States by my parents without a choice. They brought me here because they wanted to give me a better future. They always encouraged me to achieve a higher education until they realized how expensive college is. After they realized how expensive it was, They stopped motivating me. They got scared of looking at the prices of education. Yeah, education. However, being part of AVID in high school and having great teachers and counselors encouraged me that I should go to college, even though I wouldn't qualify for federal aid, school scholarships, and had many other barriers in my way, but I had the potential to do it. Senior year of high school was probably one of the most defining years of my life. After hours of writing essays, asking for letters of recommendations, while keeping up with schoolwork, I managed to receive 6 scholarships. Thanks to the Singer Foundation, the Rotary Foundation, and many other people in Eugene for the support, I was a step closer to reaching my dream of becoming a civil engineer. However, my friends and classmates weren't able to fulfill their dreams because they don't qualify for any type of financial assistance. This is heartbreaking for me because I know that they can also help contribute to the Oregon economy in so many ways, but they aren't able to receive a higher education because of financial assistance. Some of them are currently working or attending community college, but money is an issue because if they aren't able to transfer in the next 2 years, they will not be able for in-state tuition at any Oregon Public University. Only one of the 6 scholarships I received was renewable, meaning I had to keep applying for a limited amount of scholarships yearly. I am worried because if I don't finish my degree in 5 years, I would get charged international fees. And obviously, I don't have the money to do that. All I am asking is for an equal opportunity for all Oregonians to achieve a higher education. I know it is up to you if you want to help us reach our dreams and goals or destroy them. That is why I ask you to support SB 932. Thank you.
Thank you. You want to move the mic? That's fine. Don't need to be close. Just perfect.
I got quite a loud voice. So I want to thank you all for giving me this opportunity to come up here and testify in support of SB 932, the Access Opportunity Bill. So my name is Myra Martinez. I'm a Portland State University student. This is my 3rd year. Wow. And I live in Beaverton. Growing up in the U.S., and attending school has been a challenge for many, not just myself. Everyone around you tells you to get good grades to continue on your education and attend college. And as of May 2013, the opportunity expanded for undocumented students like me to access higher education through the tuition equity bill. I want to thank you all who helped pass this tuition equity bill. It was a huge step forward. College is not a cheap investment, and we all know this. Even with in-state tuition rates, Portland State University cost me $15,000. Who in the world has $15,000 just stacked in their bank account saved for 1 year in college? The reality is college continues to be one of the huge barriers for many, including myself. And honestly, students are ineligible to apply for federal or state level financial aid like myself. As an Oregon Dreamers member, I have multiple conversations with middle school and high school students who always come to me and ask me, how do I pay for school? How can I continue my education? And it breaks my heart to say, scholarships. Some of the scholarships are limited. I'm so lucky, very lucky that I got a scholarship, the diversity scholarship, as someone said, to go to school, to continue my education. I want to be an engineer, a mechanical engineer. I love math. Math is my language. You talk about numbers, man, that's me. And it breaks my heart to be like, you have scholarships. They're very limited. Only a few get them. And the other ones that don't have to be pushed away. It's difficult to explain to other students this, that scholarships isn't enough to pay for 5 years of college, and I'm only saying 5 years because it really just takes 5 years nowadays to pay for school or to finish a degree. As an advocate for higher education and a student myself, being eligible to apply for Oregon's Opportunity Grant will make it possible for many awaiting this chance to enter a university without the fear of leaving due to the cost. I thank you all once again for giving me this opportunity to share my story, and I urge you and hope that you support Senate Bill 932. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today in support of SB 932. My name is Susan Anglada Bartley. I'm the Franklin High School Advanced Scholar Program Director and an AP English teacher at Franklin. The Advanced Scholar Program has been nationally recognized for dramatically increasing the numbers of students of color and students living in poverty who are enrolled in AP courses, courses which nationally and historically are populated by white upper middle class students. In 2013, I won the National Education Association's H. Council Trenholm Human and Civil Rights Award for my work. This school year, I won the On Point Prize for Excellence in Education, and my mortgage was paid for a year. What does it mean to win when the people you love can't win with you? I stand here to answer that question and share some statistics. During the 2013-14 school year, 31% of Franklin's Latino 10th through 12th grade students were enrolled in AP courses. In just 1 year, that number has grown to 44.6%. Many of our Latino students are indeed U.S. citizens whose families have lived here for several generations, but there are also a good number who, despite meeting the requirement of taking four or more AP courses, cannot access financial aid for college. And Franklin is not alone. Numbers of Latino students, and specifically undocumented students who are reaching for access to college at Roosevelt, Madison High School, and many schools throughout the state, continue to grow as well. At Franklin High School, in our diverse community of learners, I've witnessed incredible moments of compassion and love, which continue to inspire me to do this work. Last year, after a unit I taught on racism and closing the achievement gap in public education, several undocumented students willingly shared about their struggle with the group. After class, a documented peer stayed to discuss forming a scholarship and raising money to send his equally deserving peers to college. He rode his bike to the bank to establish the account. Together and with the help of our community, we raised $5,000 and awarded the scholarship to two members of the Advanced Scholar Program. While these two amazing women can't be here with me today, I know I have two angels by my side. One was brought here by her parents as a small child. Soon after arrival, she was struck by a hit-and-run driver, breaking both of her little legs. She experienced injustice since her parents were unable to navigate the police system as undocumented people. The person who hit her was never brought to justice, but she kept on seeking it. With the help of the scholarship, she's now enrolled in a college program to become a teacher. The other young woman, a child escaping the chaos of the cartels, excelled in school, became a community leader, and just passed her first set of clinical exams toward her goal of becoming a nurse. These two women represent thousands of others who wish for the opportunity to improve their lives and the lives of future generations through higher education. They and others have taught me the greatest lessons I've learned in teaching. Brilliance has absolutely nothing to do with who your parents are. The brilliance of our entire population of young people, including our undocumented students, is needed for the future of Oregon. If a group of young people at Franklin High School, young people who saw discrimination and refused to allow it to persist in their own environment, can create social change with spare change, then, trusted representatives, so can you. Please vote to extend the Oregon Opportunity Grant to all students. This life-changing decision is a vote for our students and for the future of Oregon. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any questions? Nope. Thanks very much. Maritza Ramon, Kate Peterson, and Maria Saldana. Oh, we already did Marina. Thanks. So that would be Debbie Crisk, if Debbie's here. She's out there. Debbie, if you can hear me out there. Good. Thank you, Debbie. And whoever wants to go first.
Dear Chair and esteemed members of the committee, my name is Marissa Bramil, and I am a student at Portland Community College. I am here today to ask for you to support Senate Bill 932. I was 1 year old when I arrived to the land of the freedom and dreams. My mother immigrated to the United States because she knew I would shine here, become a leader in my community, inspire my peers. I don't remember the screams or the fears of my journey, but I can feel the intensity of emotions my mother has. I never saw myself as the indifferent because I grew in the culture and language. But being undocumented made me different. Sometimes it seems that my dreams will come to an end because my community isn't aware of me. It has categorized me as a criminal, but in reality, I'm a student who is fighting to succeed. I knew then that education is my light. My parents left their land and loved ones so that I could have a better life, a life that will change my path, a life I would never have in Mexico. I attend Portland Community College. As a nursing student, I found my passion of healing by care and compassion. However, I'm still not done with my prerequisites. I'm not a full-time student because I have to pay for school on my own. It's just so hard making ends meet. I know I won't be done in 3 years, and it scares me to see that my dreams are being threatened once again. I'm working extremely hard to obtain a higher education, and the thought of not being able to get in-state tuition worries me a lot. I enjoy being at school and seeing the joy that education brings to my fellow undocumented peers. I think about the future and realize that it's not easy for any of us. Graduating within 5 years is unrealistic. I can barely afford to take one or two classes. How can I be expected to transfer so soon? I'm afraid that all my hard work is going to be taken for granted. I'm constantly facing the biggest obstacle, money. There's no financial support available to me, and I know that without your support, my dreams will be shattered. I'm proud to say I'm a college student. Even though money is such a struggle, I'm fighting to win the battle. I need you. I need all of your support to make my dreams come true. I need you to be my allies, to believe in my dreams and hard work. I have wings, but I need help continuing to fight. I urge you to support Senate Bill 932. Thank you once again for your time.
Thank you.
For the record, I'm Kate Peterson, Assistant Provost for Enrollment Management at Oregon State University. Chair Roblin and the committee members, I'm actually going to skip my prepared comments. I don't think anything I have to add can have the same power as the words that we've heard from the students today. So other than that, really urge you to support Senate Bill 932 as it is currently written. It will make a huge difference for those students who are currently denied an opportunity to pursue their full achievement, their potential. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Debbie Koreski. It's my privilege to be here today on behalf of Portland State University, and I wanted to add just some numbers to the amount of students that we're seeing as Oregon's most diverse university. So this year, about 40% of the students who enrolled in Portland State as freshmen identified as students of color, so our population is becoming more and more diverse every year. We currently have about 25 students per term who enroll in Portland State University under the eligibility requirements of 2787, which was the first bill. And this year, we have denied eligibility to 8 students under 2787 because of the 3-year provision. So 8 students that applied were denied eligibility because of the 3-year stopout provision. And we've had conversations with about 10 more students who decided not to apply to transfer from PCC into PSU once they learned of the 3-year stopout. So total just this year, about 20 students. So this is not enormous amounts of students, but for those 20 or so students, this is an incredibly sad day to think that you're going to be able to come from Portland State, from Portland Community Colleges into Portland State, but then learn that there's one tiny provision of the original bill that's going to prevent you from doing that. The other statistic for the committee's consideration is in-state tuition at Portland State. This is not your room and board. This is not your gas money. This is just your tuition and fees. It's about $8,000 a year right now. And out-of-state tuition is $24,000 per year. So the difference between that is really considerable, and it just makes it out of reach for students who can't qualify for the provisions under 2787. So thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Nope, thank you. That is the entire list that we had. Is there anybody that we missed that would love, that wanted to take an opportunity to speak to the committee today? I'm not seeing anybody rush. I'll give them a couple minutes, the people that are outside. If not, we are going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 932. And for people so that they understand, oh, did you want to?
We have one person.
Okay, bring them on in. We'll open it back up. We'll open up our public hearing on 932 for our person that was brave enough to come through here. So come on up.
I have 3 minutes. Is that correct?
Yes.
Committee, chairman, my name is Ayrton. I graduated from North Salem High School in 2013. And the reason why I'm here is because I'm in favor of Senate Bill 932. It really is something that's going to help not just me personally, but my little sister, my brother, who's currently enrolled at University of Oregon. It's going to help us, the whole community, eventually not just proceed our higher education, but also give back to our community. Me personally, for example, I am studying to do exercise and sports science and eventually becoming a physician assistant, hopefully maybe going on to medical school. But right now, because of having to pay so much for tuition out of pocket, that seems really kind of impossible. But I believe that with your help and that with every other senator and House rep that we have here in Oregon, they can initially make that dream come true for me and for other dreamers like me. Honestly, the reason why I want to do that is because when I walk the streets of Salem, unfortunately, you see some kids that maybe don't have, or some parents that don't have the ability to take their children to the doctor because of improper undocumentation or because they just don't qualify for the subsidized Oregon health plan that we have currently in state. And I want to be that person that goes out to them and reaches out and helps them out, better their lives, because who doesn't deserve a good, healthy life? And who doesn't deserve to be able to reach for their dreams and to be able to help everyone out as far as complete their dreams? And a lot of my oppositions who will eventually make their voices heard and be opposed to our bill will say that this bill will only help out undocumented students and will only allow us to continue to break the law. But that's false, because we're not here breaking laws. Yeah, we were brought here by our parents, but that wasn't our choice. It was our parents, and they wanted us to have a much better life. They wanted us to eventually go to high school, graduate from high school, have a job, and that's all I've ever known from my parents, is go to high school, get your degree, and get something better in life, because we don't want you working 9, 10 hour days and not make enough money to even make ends week. And eventually, I feel like that's going to be something that the opposition wants to say, is they're just going to keep breaking the law. But we're not here breaking the law. We're eventually here, we're making the law even better, and we're going to help a whole community overall. We're going to eventually better the whole Oregon economic standpoint. We're going to make a contribution, not just academically, but we're going to make a contribution to the state's revenue in overall, in general. That's all.
Thank you very much.
Thank
you. Any questions? No, thank you.
Thank you.
Caught you midway, but that's good. I guess I could give one last call if there's anybody out on the outside. I keep forgetting about that group out there. They should make their way quickly to the room. And while I'm waiting without closing the meeting, I will tell people that, in general, what happens next, this bill will be rescheduled at some time in the future, and you can watch for that, for a work session. As you were here at the beginning, you saw the bill that had the work session. That bill had been heard previously. Did you want to talk?
Yes.
Okay, come on up and take a seat. That bill had been heard previously, and so they made some amendments. They got things worked out to where they thought this group of people would pass it. He brought it back. You saw the senator give an explanation of his bill and the changes. This committee moved it on to the next deal. That's the work session, and that's the next thing to look forward to with respect to this bill at some time in the future. So we don't have that. I don't think it's actually scheduled yet, is it? Okay. I was thinking that we hadn't, but Some of them come fairly quickly. Others, we look at different issues and we come up with a date. So that's just information for all of you who are here. So with that, testimony.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you for...
And you can move away a little bit because it's a really careful mic. Yeah.
Okay. My name's Elizabeth Perry, and I really appreciate the opportunity to share a little bit of... well, first of all, thanking you for allowing us to speak on behalf of Senate Bill 932. I work for Mount Hood Community College, and my position is to help students not only enter college, but successfully complete college. This year, as I helped students in the transfer process, I was saddened when I saw many students who had worked very hard, sometimes one, two, three jobs, to pay for the community college fees. And as several students have so well described, the college fees, as you all know, are many times out of reach, just for any student coming into the college setting. But for those students who have no financial means of paying other than their hard work, 3 years is a very short amount of time to make it through the community college and then on to the university. So when I saw that this bill had been introduced, several students from Mount Hood Community College, myself, we got the word out because our community depends on the hard work of students, many of whom you've already heard from today, but countless other students who are representing our community who are doing everything right. Those students who put their heart and soul into their education get amazing grades despite working three jobs, despite, you know, not only contributing to their own education but also helping their families, making their lives better as they help our community. The students that I see every day in my office are students who are not only making the academic grades, but also contributing on our campus, also contributing in our community. And through this Senate bill, you will allow that continuation of that dream to continue. The economic impact, I believe, will help our community. These DACA students are, by and away, very, very hardworking students. And I think not only the social justice benefit, but the economic benefit to our state will be proven by the extension of this bill and by taking away the time limits that are currently imposed. I believe that Oregon has been a leader in education in many instances, and by continuing to expand opportunities for Oregon students, that we will continue to be a leader in education and light the way for the rest of the country. Thank you for your support of Senate Bill 932.
Thank you for coming. Any questions? Seeing none. Again, thank you very much. This is about the time we set aside, so I appreciate everybody using their time wisely and having us get through all the different people that testified. So, again, I want to thank you for that, and we are going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 932 for the second time. Anyway, so thank you, and I know many of you are going to want to leave, so we'll take a short... I can't turn it off because she's not there, but we're going to take a little break. Well, those of you who wish to stay, we'd love to have you stay. Those that would like to exit, now is the time because we're going to go on to another couple bills. And we'll take a short recess.
We might need to do the unless we get...
That's true. That's what... Exactly. Yes. Right. Yeah, sure. I'd like to do the others, but we didn't have our folks there. he was supposed to testify and be right back. Son of a bitch. I was waiting. Otherwise, we'll do our public hearings. Get those as soon as I get my votes back. We're going to come back from our recess for the Senate Education Committee, and we had an order. We're going to do a couple of work sessions, but we are missing some of our members, and they generally like to vote. So we're going to have two public hearings that we have. So we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 78. We might as well do both of them at the same time because they're the same people, right? And Senate Bill 83, and we will call up Mary from Director of Teach Oregon and Randy Heights with respect to that one. And I don't think so. Mary and at least Mary's on the second one.
So and we have some teachers here.
Oh, good. Okay.
Senator. Yes.
Okay, perfect. So if you want to speak to both of them right now, that's fine.
Okay, well, we'll do 78 first and then 83.
Perfect.
How does that sound?
That sounds great.
Great.
Chair Roblin and members of the Senate Education Committee, I am Mary Cattis. I'm the director of Teach Oregon, which is a chalkboard project initiative working with school districts and university teacher preparation programs in a collaborative effort to improve teacher preparation in Oregon, and we've presented some of our work to this committee. Three of our projects are funded by Chalkboard. Two are funded through the ODE Network of Quality Teaching and Learning. And in the projects involve 13 of our school districts and 7 universities, and we're completing our second year of implementation. I'm here today to provide you with an overview of Senate Bill 78 that will include the Dash 1 amendments, and I'm joined by Dr. Randy Hitz, Dean of the Graduate School of Education at Portland State University. Research is clear, and I know you, as members of this committee, have heard this before, that the single most important factor in improving student achievement is an effective teacher. Our teacher preparation programs in Oregon obviously then play a huge role in making this happen, along with our school districts. A 2013 audit of teacher preparation and professional development by the Oregon Secretary of State's office revealed at that time that half of the school district administrators responding to the audit survey said that teacher preparation programs did not sufficiently prepare teachers, and that routine reporting on performance indicators in our teacher preparation programs in Oregon was lacking. Senate Bill 78 would create a 7-year runway for our teacher preparation programs in Oregon, along with a recommendation for some funding, $200,000, that would carry through 2022, that's one of the Dash amendments, to assist programs in preparing for the Council for Accreditation of Educator Preparation Programs, that's referred to as the CAPE accreditation process, based on new CAPE standards for teacher preparation. Senate Bill 78 would require programs to become accredited under these new standards by 2022. Currently, 8 of our 18 TSBC-approved teacher preparation in programs in Oregon have national accreditation under NCATE. It's important to note, however, that this type of accreditation is different than institutional accreditation. A university may have institutional accreditation, but not have specific professional program accreditation. CAPE is now the single organization in the U.S. for the accreditation of educator preparation programs. And please allow me to provide a little background on this change. CAPE, as I mentioned, stands for the Council for Accreditation of Educator Preparation. It was formed through the merger of TEAC, the Teacher Education Council, and NCATE, the National Council for Accreditation of Teacher Education. From 2012 through 13, a panel of diverse stakeholders engaged in the development of standards and recommendations for a different approach to the accreditation of teacher preparation programs. The panel consisted of deans, state policymakers, local superintendents, unions, teachers, P-12 student parents, alternative preparation programs, and even critics of educator preparation and accreditation. And after spirited discussions, this group came to consensus and emphasized 4 areas of change that they determined would have a strong effect on teacher preparation. These areas were stronger clinical experiences in close partnerships with school districts, a more intentional focus on the quality and diversity of teacher candidates, inclusion of all providers, university-based to alternative, online, for-profit programs in the accreditation process, and evidence of the use of outcome measures and impacts on P-12 student learning and development. The standards were adopted in August and have been endorsed by the Council for Chief State School Officers, the Chiefs for Change, the State Higher Education Executive Officers, Deans for Impact, and the Council for Higher Education Accreditation. CAPE standards are intentionally aligned with INTASC, the Interstate Teaching Assessment and Support Consortium. That should sound familiar because these are the standards that we've based our teacher evaluation instruments on in Oregon, Common Core State Standards, National Board for Professional Teaching Standards, and the International Society for Technology and Education Standards. All of these standards are adopted or aligned to standards that we currently have in place in Oregon. There is a site-based review process that is conducted by our TSPC for all teacher preparation programs in Oregon. It's conducted every 7 years using an internal state review team prior to approval of the program.
Under Senate Bill 78, TSPC would continue to approve programs and be involved in the accreditation process with CAPE. It's important to note that other program approval requirements from TSPC, such as the equity standards that they've put in place, would not be affected by national accreditation. We're often asked, why a bill to require CAPE accreditation? Our state should have high expectations for our teacher preparation programs. You know, all of you so well, that we need effective, well-prepared teachers. Having our teacher preparation programs meet these new standards would raise the bar on the review process for teacher preparation programs through the use of more rigorous national standards using external site reviewers, require closer partnerships between universities and school districts in the preparation of teachers and collecting evidence of performance of graduates. It would require the use of outcome evidence-based measures to inform continuous improvement of our programs and demand self-assessment of the programs along with evidence that would be used to support the program's claim of meeting the standard, and prepare our teacher preparation programs for the requirements anticipated under the reauthorization of the Higher Education Act, which is proposed would tie directly to the use of TEACH grant funds for Oregon students preparing to become teachers. We need to continue to ask ourselves, with the continuing rise in the cost of our university programs, should there not be a level of quality assurance with our teacher preparation programs for students and their parents? Shouldn't all of our teacher preparation programs have this seal of excellence on their programs? Our smaller preparation programs produce high-quality teachers too, yet many lack the resources to go through the process of accreditation. Senate Bill 78 gives all of our programs a start on this path. Now I would like to introduce Dr. Randy Hitz, Dean of the Graduate School of Education at Portland State. Dean Hitz serves on the National Data Task Force for CAPE and its executive board. PSU's Graduate School of Education faculty and Dean Hitz will be the first Oregon teacher preparation program to seek accreditation under the new National Professional Standards this fall, 2015. Dean Hitz.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to speak on behalf of Senate Bill 78. You have my written testimony and some of that.
You need to identify yourself. Even though you're
for the record, I'm Randy Hitz, Dean of the Graduate School of Education at Portland State University. I'm not used to getting introduced like that.
I know, exactly. I understand.
So I wasn't sure what to do with that. Anyway, thank you for this opportunity. You have my written testimony, and so I won't be redundant with things that Mary has just indicated, other than to say that that Mary also is considered one of the leaders in the nation. Oregon is among a few states that are working with CAPE to improve the clinical experience, and she, along with Keith Mink from TSPC and Vicki Chamberlain, are considered leaders in this whole effort to improve accreditation and to improve the profession in the nation. Let me just make five real quick points to complement what Mary said so well, actually, in her testimony. First of all, this bill is about improving education, just plain and simple, and one of the best ways to do that is to improve the profession, and we think this is a key, necessary thing to do in order to improve the teaching profession. Secondly, this is consistent with efforts that you have made very recently by creation of the Network for Quality Teaching and Learning. It's also consistent, as Mary indicated, with the recommendations of the Secretary of State a couple years ago. This is also what mature professions do, by the way. Can you imagine going to a physician who didn't graduate from an accredited medical school? It just doesn't happen. Or an engineer that didn't graduate from an accredited engineering school. That doesn't happen, but it does happen in our field. Only 65% of the teacher ed programs in the nation, 65% are nationally accredited, and that is a point of some embarrassment for me as a professional. So we need to fix that, and this bill will help to do that in the state of Oregon. What this is really about, then, improving the profession, but national accreditation does improve the profession, and it assures quality, and the public deserves that assurance, we think. And just as importantly, it demands continuous improvement. And as Mary said, Portland State's in the process of preparing for the first ever CAPE accreditation. We're one of the pilot universities in the nation to do that. But we do it because it makes us better. And I can tell you that having standards developed by the profession, having rubrics that help us understand those standards, going through a self-assessment and then going through the rigor of having a national team come in and assess us makes us a better program. And that would be true for any program. I don't care, you know, the quality of the university. Every program can benefit through that kind of self-assessment and then critical review by peers from around the nation and the state. So with that, I would also just end by saying that I also recognize that there's a cost associated with accreditation, and I have seen the analysis done by Vicki Chamberlain of TSPC, and I think it's excellent. So there are some costs, and I think to support those institutions that have not been nationally accredited and wish to seek it, I think makes a lot of good sense, and I really appreciate that being part of this bill. So thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you.
Questions?
Any questions on, yes. Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious if we have an accredited program for graduates, teaching graduates of these programs, would that expedite the licensing requirements for them? We've got a little bit of a backlog now in terms of being able to deal with that. Seems to me if the accreditation works, I can think of other professions, it's pretty much, other than a background check, pretty much have fulfilled your demonstrated your ability to teach if you come out of a graduate or an accredited program.
Yeah, well, I'm a little hesitant to respond to that. If you want Vicki Chamberlain in the room.
Do you want Vicki to come up now? Okay. Huh? Vicki Chamberlain.
Come I'm on, just Vicki. Curious.
Vicki, join us.
Yeah, it wasn't fair to have you answer that one either.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, Vicki Chamberlain, Director of TSPC. To answer your question, Senator Beyer, Oregon graduates have a fast track, and they don't get caught up in the backlog. And the backlog is a result of the last 2 years when we had to do about 30% budget cuts. So we do have a request in to increase our staff and catch up on the backlog. But about 10 years ago, we set up a process that goes exactly like you suggested, that because we accredit these programs and we do spot audits, Oregon graduates' applications go to the front when they arrive in the office.
Any other questions for any of the people up here now? Thank you very much. And now, since our other one is already open,
yep,
we can invite, let's see. Let's write from the back.
Kelsey
Drake, Cassandra Thornstead. And they're there. That was pretty quick. They just read my mind. Thanks for being here.
They're teachers, so
yes,
they've
exactly
got good sense.
Exactly.
Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Canope, and members of the Senate Education Committee, I am Mary Cattis, as I've already stated, and I'm here today to present you with an overview of Senate Bill 83 that includes -2 amendments in my comments, and I will introduce two cooperating teachers from Teach Oregon and the Distinguished Educators Council to share their experiences with you. Senate Bill 83 is based on the work of the Teach Oregon pilots and also feedback and information provided to us from several sources, including active cooperating teachers. Earlier, I made reference to the Secretary of State's audit of teacher preparation and professional development and told you that 50% of the school administrators that were surveyed in that audit felt that teachers were not sufficiently prepared. The report also stated that the clinical practice experience needed to be strengthened and cited a 2010 NCATE panel recommendation for teacher candidates to be placed with trained cooperating or coaching teachers. We've put that in place in our planned interventions in Teach Oregon. In 2013, DHM Research was also hired by Chalkboard to conduct a statewide survey of K-12 educators in Oregon. 92% of respondents indicated that they supported purposeful placement of student teachers, or teacher candidates as we call them now, with high-quality cooperating teachers. In 2014, our Distinguished Educator Council cited poor experiences as former cooperating teachers, indicating that there was no training for the role, no intentional selection for placements, minimal interaction with university supervisors, and few, if any, incentives for cooperating teachers. Often then, our problem in Oregon is a lack of coordination between districts and universities, no selection criteria for cooperating teachers, often being relegated to volunteers. This results in our student teachers or teacher candidates not being placed with competent and accomplished teachers engaging in best practices. Minimal incentives to cooperating teachers for their work over and above their contractual day is also an issue, and a lack of training and information for the cooperating teacher in their role. The outcome, then, is that often we are shortchanging our teacher candidates, our student teachers, from meaningful clinical practice, and also then we find that cooperating teachers are reluctant to take on the role of working with teacher candidates in their classrooms. However, we've seen a reversal in one of our Teach Oregon districts when these conditions were improved and changed, where the retention rate of cooperating teachers over a two-year period went from 54% to 92%. Overwhelmingly, teacher candidates tell us that their time in the classroom with students, their clinical practice experience, as it's called, is the highlight and key element of their training to be a teacher. This means that we must take steps to make this experience as effective as possible. Senate Bill 83 would require the convening of a work group over the next biennium, 2015 to 2017, facilitated by TSPC, with representatives from OEA, active cooperating teachers, universities both public and private, and nonprofits. The work group would develop standards and guidelines as needed, recommend any needed legislative changes, identify funding sources, and develop a plan for training and preparing cooperating teachers for their work with our teacher candidates. The bill would require that starting in the 2017-18 school year, 500 teachers would be trained to be cooperating teachers each year through 2019-2020. To date, in the first 18 months, Teach Oregon projects have trained 326 cooperating teachers in co-teaching and other supportive strategies for working with teacher candidates. We believe that the work being done in Teach Oregon can be leveraged by the work group. This bill would require our teacher preparation programs to place teacher candidates with a trained cooperating teacher by 2021. Teachers selected for the role of cooperating teacher would have a minimum of 3 years of teaching experience with evidence of their effectiveness as a teacher. With proposed timelines in the bill, there would be potentially 1,500 trained cooperating teachers by 2020-2021, and then a refreshment of 100 cooperating teachers trained each subsequent year. Today, I'd like to introduce a couple teachers who, well, we have one left in the audience. The other one had an appointment. This is Ingrid Ceballos. You stand, Ingrid. Ingrid is from our Distinguished Educators Council. She's a teacher at Mary Eyre Elementary in Salem Kaiser. And we also had Mary McGinnis here, who's a teacher at the Wilson River High School Alternative Program in Tillamook, which serves all of the Tillamook school districts. And they were here in support of these two individuals. This is Kelsey Dake. Kelsey is a cooperating and clinical teacher at Cesar Chavez Elementary in Salem Kaiser. And Cassandra Thonsted, and Cass is a teacher at Newburgh High School and also a member of the Distinguished Educator Council. Kelsey, are you going first?
Yes.
Okay.
Chair Roblin and Vice Chair Knopp and members of the Senate Education Committee, I am Kelsey Dake. I am currently a teacher at Cesar Chavez Elementary School in the Salem-Kaiser School District, and I work closely with our university partners, Western Oregon University and Corbin University, in preparing teacher candidates for their role as classroom teachers as part of the Teach Oregon Project.
I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 83, Training for Cooperating Teachers. I would like to start by telling you about my experience working with a student teacher before the Teach Oregon project was put in place and created a partnership between our school and our local universities. My first student teacher had a difficult time making it through her program. It was not all that different from my experience as a student teacher just 3 years prior. My student teacher was frustrated. She was overwhelmed with the expectations that are placed upon teachers. She found herself with lots of unanswered questions, and I had a hard time answering them. I was frustrated too. I felt like I wanted to support this person, but I just didn't know how. After that experience, I was lucky enough to get training as a mentor teacher through the Clinical Teaching Academy. This training has taught me so many skills in working with student teachers, or now called teacher candidates. I've learned co-teaching strategies so I can model and support specific strategies in my classroom with my teacher candidate. I've been taught how to ask guiding questions, how to give constructive feedback, and be a much more involved mentor teacher than what the traditional student teaching experience ever allowed. Another major difference that I've experienced between the traditional model and the new clinical teacher model is the level of university support and involvement. In my own experience, and with my first student teacher, the role of the university was minimal, and it was disconnected with what was happening in the classroom. Now, with the new model, the universities play a collaborative role with me and my teacher candidates. They are aligning their classes to mimic our professional development. They have aligned their rubrics with our evaluation system. The university supervisors are in my classroom once, twice a week, observing, giving feedback, connecting with me, all to help support this developing new teacher. I'm here today speaking to you because I believe in this program. I've seen the difference between the old model and this new one, and to me, this level of collaboration and support is the right way to work with developing teachers. I think back to my own experience and that I made it, but it wasn't easy for me. I think about my first student teacher often, and I wonder what she's doing because she didn't make it through her program. I'm sorry for this, and I wish that I could have supported her. In the past 2 years, including this school year, I've worked with 5 teacher candidates. All 3 that I worked with last year have been hired in our school district and are now first-year teachers. When I see them now, I feel so proud of this work that we do. I know that although this first year is challenging, that they have been set up for success. Not only is this a program that sets up teacher candidates for success, but it is a program that has affected me truly as well. I've been trained in how to teach children, and now I'm trained in how to teach adults. And this has been an incredible leadership opportunity for me, and it is really satisfying work. And you should see how this affects the students in my classroom as well. I have 30 second graders this year, and I can't explain how incredibly helpful it is to have another teacher in the classroom. With 2 teachers, we can differentiate instruction so much easier to create an environment that accommodates many levels of learning. And also, I think that the students benefit from seeing their teachers as lifelong learners. This work is incredibly important and beneficial to everyone who is involved. However, it takes a lot of extra time and hard work for mentor teachers. It is so nice to be acknowledged and compensated for this work. If all student teachers in the state of Oregon became teacher candidates, supported by this collaboration between their mentor teachers and universities, I think this would be a huge step forward in the right direction for our system of education. Thank you for your time today and letting me share my experiences in preparing new teachers for tomorrow's future. I hope you will support Senate Bill 83, Training for Cooperating Teachers.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin and Vice Chair Knopp, members of the Senate Education Committee, I am Cassandra Thonstad,
I am currently a teacher at Newburgh High School in the Newburgh School District, and I work closely with our university partner, George Fox University, in preparing teacher candidates for their role as classroom teachers as part of the Teach Oregon project. I am also a member of the Distinguished Educators Council, a group of 15 educators recognized for their leadership from around Oregon. I am here to testify in support of the Senate Bill 83, Training for Cooperating Teachers. I have known since the second grade that I wanted to teach. In fact, I'm a fourth generational math teacher in my family. That's my dad. and I grew up knowing that teaching is the best career I could ever hope to have. When it was my turn to be a student teacher in a classroom, to learn about teaching and to grow my own abilities as an educator, I was devastated to be placed with a teacher that wanted me for the sole purpose of covering their paternity leave. And therefore gave me little guidance and little help. And then being placed with a teacher who wanted me to do everything the same way they did because they had received no training and gave me little room to grow. My first true experience in the classroom was the day that I stepped into my first teaching job, ill-prepared for what I was to face as a solo teacher in an isolated classroom, having received little coaching and little help. As an experienced teacher, I knew it was my duty and privilege to be able to give new teacher candidates a better experience than I had, which would enable them to accelerate towards excellence in this amazing profession. But it couldn't be in the same types of program that I attended a dozen years ago. It had to be better. I have served as a co-teacher with five teacher candidates from George Fox University, and there are so many differences from a traditional student teaching experience, but allow me to highlight the ones that impact our students the most. First, students never lose their original teacher. In fact, in many cases, our teacher candidates begin the year with us, learning to build a classroom community which sets teachers up for success all year long. The teacher candidate and cooperating teacher work together to enhance student learning through better differentiation, remediation, and acceleration because the student-to-teacher ratio is cut in half, giving students the opportunity to work with different teaching styles and in smaller groups. Better teaching programs allow for more appropriate learning opportunities for our students. Second, our teacher candidates and cooperating teachers in the Teach Oregon project are given professional learning opportunities several times throughout the year to ensure better quality teaching and better cooperation between teaching teams. Students benefit by having an experienced teacher in the classroom at all times and by having a new teacher who comes in with new ideas and renewed energy to share within the classroom. Both teachers have the opportunity to learn from each other and are given time in their professional learning to share out and dig deeper in the work they do. Better teaching programs allow for growth-minded veteran teachers in our buildings. Last, we work to ensure that teaching teams are purposely chosen so that both the cooperating teacher and the teacher candidate choose to work together. Dynamic teams have evolved from this purposeful placement process that is so different from the usual cold call to place candidates in the fall for the sole purpose of accreditation. Our candidates are observed more often and given more feedback to grow and change in their practice, and this influences both the teacher candidate and the cooperating teacher, growing the practice of both. Better teaching programs allow for better teacher candidates entering our schools prepared to take on the challenges that they will face. The reality is the teacher candidates coming out of Teach Oregon programs are much better prepared for taking on their own classroom and much more ready to be a part of the collaborative teams in their schools. This requires training for the cooperating teachers and the teacher candidates and should also lead to additional pay and recognition for those completing the program. It is essential that we prioritize teacher preparation programs if we want to ensure that our students continue to learn in meaningful ways, leading to higher achievement for all students. Let me close by saying thank you for your time today. Preparing effective teachers for our schools is one of the most significant things we can do to improve instruction in our schools and to close the achievement gap.
Any questions? Thank you all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we're going to close our public hearings on Senate Bill 78, and we'll close our public hearing on Senate Bill 83. And now we're going to kind of go back into our mode to work on some work sessions, and we may do those two bills if I get a nod from people moving them as well. So first we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 81, and with that I'll have Senator Haas give a short explanation, or do you want to have our other
after the motion?
Oh, that's right,
discussion.
I'll ask, let's do the
amendment. You want me to move this? Okay, I'm sorry. Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the -1 amendments
on Senate Bill 81.
Senator Hass moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments on Senate Bill 81. Is there any discussion? And we might want to give a short explanation of what the Dash 1 amendments do.
Thank you. The original bill would have lowered the mandatory minimum age from 5 to 7 to from 7 to 5 to attend school.
Oh, that's 321.
No. Then what are you talking about?
81.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Okay, sorry about that.
Okay. Get the files in order here.
That's right.
Boy, I've never done that.
Yeah, I wish I could say that.
Senate Bill 81 is the community college bill, which we had a long hearing on and had a professor from Wisconsin. We went through and worked very closely with the community colleges on this amendment, and they said we would like to be in the spotlight here, but we do need a list of things. And I think we went down the punch list for the community colleges, and that's why they testified in support of this, and I think we covered everything they needed. Of course, the thing they need the most to do this is the funding to carry it off, and it's about $20 million. It's why it's going to Ways and Means. I think someone mentioned in the hearing that we would have liked to have been first on this bill, but Tennessee beat us to it. And there is value in that, however, and that is we can do some of the things that Tennessee did right and leave out some of the things they wish they hadn't done. But mostly the value is we can see that this model works really, really well. They had an overwhelming response, and their model is the same as this, which is federal aid must be applied for first, and the state pays the last dollar in. And that's the same model here. That's why the price tag is relatively cheap to be able to say that we have free community college to Oregon high school graduates. And so I talked to the governor about this. She is supportive. We've had calls from the White House asking how things are going on this bill. And so I'm just hope that we can continue this conversation down the hall in the Ways and Means process.
And it does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
It
we
does.
Actually, and we do have the documentation.
We're adding subsequent.
Okay, we're adding it. Okay. So with that, Senator Hass. Oh, is there any further discussion on the amendments? I'm going to get back to this, right? I looked over and saw Senator Bercher reminding me that no. No discussion? Is there any opposition to the amendment? That's the part he reminded me about. Seeing none, it is adopted. Senator Hass, as amended.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 81 as amended to the floor of the Oregon Senate with the subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. So Senator Hass has moved Senate Bill 81 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be a no at this point in time, and the reason is we keep circling around the main issue here, and the main issue here is the core funding for K-12 and the core funding for community colleges. And until I have a level of a certainty that we have addressed those issues, I can't really support any other education funding, because that should be our first mission.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Senator Cano.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think for the same reason, you know, I've obviously been an advocate for $8 billion for K-12, and I'm trying to get the yes on this one, but I think it would be disingenuous of me to transfer down multi-million dollar programs to Ways and Means when I'm trying to focus on getting K-12 funded at a level that I think it needs to be, as well as community colleges, just their base funding, which I don't think we've, at least in the co-chair's budget, is funded at a level that I think is acceptable yet. And I am hopeful that we can get there this session on many of these projects.
Okay. Senator Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to support this motion today. I think it is
part of a larger conversation that keeps coming up over and over and over in this hearing room. We've heard passionate testimony about the barriers that unaffordability of higher education causes in this hearing. We heard about it today in the bill that we talked about earlier. We've heard about it in the Workforce Committee as we had conversations about paid sick leave. We've had conversations about it in minimum wage. Conversations. We had a little disagreement, but this is the issue that fifth-year program is about as well. I don't think that we can afford to set this conversation aside. If we really want to move people into the middle class, if we want people to be financially self-sufficient, we have to find a way for them to be able to obtain the degrees and training that they need. And that's probably a whole variety of strategies. So that's why I'll be supporting this today. And I'm really grateful to Senator Haas for his leadership on this. And so thank you for all the work that you keep putting into it, Senator.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, we'll have a roll call vote on the motion.
Senator Baird-Sugar?
No.
Senator Beyer?
Yes.
Aye. Senator Haas?
Aye.
Senator Cruz?
No.
Vice Chair Knope?
No.
Chair Roblin?
Yes. So the motion passes, and it will be on its way to Ways and Means. So we're going to close our work session on Senate Bill 81, and now we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 321. And we'll go again with...
We'll get the right file.
Okay. Yeah.
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments as presented on Senate Bill 321.
Senator Haas moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments as presented. Is there any discussion? Do you want to do a short explanation of the Dash 3s?
Sure. The Dash 3s were really an effort at compromise with my pal here from Douglas County, who said if we could lower the minimum wage to age from 5 to 6 instead of from 7 to 5.
That's okay.
7 to 6.
We're going from 7 to 6. That was the deal we made. And there is still there is another amendment that allows parents to have the choice of putting their age 6 students into kindergarten or first grade. And so I felt that was a good compromise in the spirit of consensus building, and that's the essence of the Dash 3s.
So is there any further discussion on the Dash 3 amendments? Is there any opposition to the Dash 3 amendments? Seeing none, they are accepted. Senator Haas.
Senator Roblin, I move Senate Bill 321 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate as amended with a due pass recommendation.
And we do have the FIS and Ray, all of the paperwork that we need to have. Okay. So. Senator Haas moves Senate Bill 321 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just wanted to thank the proponents for their willingness to compromise on this. I think 6 is a much more acceptable age. On this issue, I hope in the future we can look at 5-year-olds that turn 5 the day after September 1st that have to wait a year before they go to kindergarten. I think there are some of those kids that are ready, and if their families are ready for them to go, I think we need to create a little bit more flexibility to let that happen.
I think they can.
Not really. In my district, if you have twins and one is born at 11:50 p.m. on September 1st and one is born at 12:01 a.m., the one's going to kindergarten, the other one can't. There is no exception to the rule.
That's become true in most schools right now. So. Any other discussion? Yes.
First off, thank you, Ms. Chair. First off, I want to thank Senator Haas for his accommodation on this, and I do appreciate that. Some of these things still trouble me from the perspective of when we did the kindergarten bill all those years ago. One of the provisions we put in the bill that has been ignored is we wouldn't go to full day until we could afford it, and I'm not sure we can actually afford it. And I think there's going to be a big hit for some of the schools that are using Title I dollars now. It's going to come soup for them, and I wish we had paid maybe a little bit more attention to that before we just went plowing ahead. But it still gets back to the base funding for K-12 that I'm not sure is adequate. I like the direction the bill is going now, but out of abundance of caution, I'm going to vote no in committee with the possibility of changing my mind when it hits the floor.
What's changed?
I just need to talk to some more people. That's all. So.
And I want to, I appreciate the fact that Senator Hess worked with a lot of people to get to the compromise, and that a number of people who originally were very uptight about that have changed their minds.
Mr. Chair, and that's what I've heard. I just haven't had a chance to really,
so I really
run the trap line on the threes yet. So.
Okay. I really appreciate that conversation. So with that, is there any other discussion on the amendment? Any opposition to the amendment? Seeing none, so ordered. We now move to
Motion. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 321 as amended to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Hess moves Senate Bill 321 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? I see none. We'll do a roll call vote.
Senator Barrett-Sugar?
No.
Senator Beyer?
Yes.
Senator Gelser?
Yes.
Yes.
Senator Cruz?
A very weak no. Whatever that means.
No.
And Chair Roblin?
Yes. So the bill passes, and we will assign this to Senator Hess to carry.
Thank you.
And we, we're running out of time, but we'll, let's go with the next two bills as well, I think. So the next one is Senate Bill 78. We're going to close the work session on 321, open a work session on Senate Bill 78. And this was the bill we just heard recently about teacher education institutions.
We did 81 first.
So, Senator Canope.
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the -1 amendments as presented.
Senator Canope moves to adopt the -1 amendments as presented. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any opposition? Seeing none, it is adopted. Senator Canope.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 78 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Canope moves Senate Bill 78 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, bill passes, and we don't need to have a sponsor of that. So we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 78, and we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 83. Senator Canope.
Yeah, Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the -2 amendments as presented.
Senator Canope moves to adopt the -2 amendments as presented. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any opposition? Also seeing none, they are adopted. Senator Canope.
Chair Roblin, I move the Senate Bill 83 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Canope moves Senate Bill 83 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? Seeing none, it shall be sent. Anybody want to carry this bill? If not, I would be glad to carry it. So
we'll do 122.
Pardon?
122.
We did read that at the beginning.
Yeah, you might have almost missed that.
Did you?
It's fine.
Okay.
You're late to the party. That's fine.
So, with that, is we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 83.
We're done.
And a lot of work today, so thanks, everyone. We're going to close our committee, Senate Education Committee, today. Thank you. Today. Thank you. Senate Education Committee.